Blog Talk.
You have reached Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. This evening, our guest is Pat Hicks, who is another friend from the old Pat O'Brien, your portable Empire University. Pat now has a home-based business called New Life Hard Floors, Wood Floors, which specializes in eco-friendly, environmentally sensitive, reclaimed and remilled antique oak and hard pine flooring. New Life Hardwood Floors is committed to the ecological friendly recycling of old growth hardwood flooring. Future generations can admire, enjoy, and benefit from the distinctive and uncommon beauty of these superlative hardwoods, which would otherwise be lost forever. We are so happy to have Pat on our show tonight, but I was first of all going to bring on Joan, but I don't believe she's here at the moment, so we will bring her on when she arrives. Good evening, Pat.
Hello there. How are you? Gosh, that
Wonderful.
Was quite an introduction there, I'll tell you.
Well, it's great to hear your voice, and I'm so excited to listen about, you know, we all love trees here. You've come to the right place.
Well, good.
And I'm very interested to know how you came to be so passionate about trees, passionate enough to have a home-based business in your home.
Well, I actually have had more than one business in my home, and it was my goal to, you talk about the visualization and all of that kind of thing. I actually envisioned being able to sit in my home office and look out across at the trees, and that's exactly what I do right now. That's what I am doing, looking out. Luckily, here I'm in Dallas, Texas, so luckily here in April it's not yet so hot that you have to turn on the air conditioning. But so the windows are open and I get to look out over the trees. Consequently, because I have this office and I'm set up, it's not too hard to actually do more than one business out of here. So
yeah, so you do have several, but the one that you really are most passionate about is the tree business, huh?
Yes. The way that I got started, and I think that's what you're asking me, is that correct?
Yeah. What brought you to trees and preserving old growth forests?
Well, I have always loved antiques, and I never thought of wood in general, wood flooring certainly, as being an antique, and I never really gave it much thought. However, I guess it was about 7 or 8 years ago, we had the opportunity, we were putting hardwood floors in our home. And the guys that lived across the street, was in that business, and he would get wood out of old buildings. Well, we got to talking, and it became clear that wood that was grown, 60, 80, 100 years ago came from trees that were 300 or 400 years old, as opposed to today. And today we're having to harvest sooner and sooner. It's just there's not old growth forests that these trees are coming of age in that require, centuries of growth to get to their full growth cycle, So
yeah.
Anyway, he said, that wood is much better than anything you can get today. And as it turned out, I was able to get some pecan that came out of a building built in 1930. And in 1930, they were using 200 or 300 year old pecan trees. And it was literally, it was just breathtaking. I mean, the guy that installed it asked to bring people over to see it. It was just gorgeous. And I knew right then, I mean, I really loved that flooring and cared about this, but I didn't think about it as a business.
Mm-hmm.
Then a few years later, I bought another house, and this time we got a pretty unique flooring. It was only manufactured for about 5 years, and it's only 1.5-inch wide oak. And I really loved it. And so we put that in. And then about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was talking to a guy that I got that from, and he made mention that he had left 100,000 feet of it just laying around. He couldn't get it all, couldn't get to it.
Wow.
Well, I found that to be pretty interesting. I started doing some research and started looking at the flooring itself and the industry and the kind of flooring that is thrown away every day. And I went, well, let me, I find this so interesting. And about a month later, I think I sold about 11,000 feet to one person. And I went, I would have liked this.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't looked back. It's been a labor of love ever since. So.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for you with this, which is very interesting. Let me just bring Joan Adams on to the call, who is otherwise known as Moonvine. Hello,
hi, Joan.
Hello, when I finally got here, the computer went down, at 5 till 6, never fails, never fails.
How are you?
But I'm glad to be here and glad you are here, Pat, and I love your story. The floors are gorgeous. I went and looked at your website.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And they are beautiful. Just beautiful.
Yeah. We actually are about 3 or 4 days away from a video that will go through the entire process. It's actually a video slideshow, if you will. But it goes through the entire process and milling it and getting it to the finished product. And I think it does a great job of telling the story, and I'm really excited about it. And I'm, we're going to have it on the website here in a week or so. We've been invited to present it to the Sierra Club Green Home website.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense
now.
Too.
Yeah, that's the folks that will really love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be your marketing because that the recycling and the saving it, salvaging it, and using it is just an amazing story. I love that.
Yeah, it's very satisfying.
I would think
it's
so.
Intensely, emotionally satisfying for me.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Well, how do you find out about wood that is in need of being picked up? That's been lying somewhere completely unnoticed for many years. Like for instance, you had said to me that there's wood that lies at the bottom of a cold river that is preserved by the silt. How do you find out about that particular kind of wood you can, and then bringing it up and out and using it?
Well, there's people that do that, and that's all they do. They go after that type of wood. It's a very specialized wood, here, let me do a little quick history on how all of that comes about. When the Europeans first got here, there were 28 million acres just of longleaf pine by itself, which is one particular species. But longleaf pine was such a good building product. It's about as hard as red oak. It is naturally fire resistant and termite proof, and the trees were just huge, 175 feet tall or so, and they were 100 to 400 feet tall, and just that type of species itself was clear cut almost completely out of existence. And what they would do is they would put logs in the river and float them down to the sawmills. Now, of course, they use cypress trees. Some of the redwoods that were cut down are it's just beyond your comprehension that they would cut these gorgeous old, centuries, thousands of year old trees down. But anyway, whatever the species was, one of the pictures on this video that I just mentioned is a cabin, and the logs that make up the cabin have been squared off, and they are made out of the tree that was the biggest tree that was around there, obviously, and that happened to have been black walnut.
Oh.
So a cabin made out of logs from black walnut trees. Well, it's just a bit beyond our comprehension now, but that was the forest. That was the kind of forest that was here when the Europeans first got here. So what happens is, whether it is logs that have been floated down the river, and what would happen is that inevitably some of them would sink. Well, you would think, how many could there be? Well, you see pictures. You see old turn-of-the-century photographs. And there are, and you cannot even see the river for all the logs that are on it. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Millions and millions and millions and millions of acres clear cut. That was the only forest management program they had. Cut it all down.
It makes you a little sick, doesn't it?
I promised, if you look at some of the photographs, and I put some in that video, if you look at some of those old photographs, you just, how could they have done it that way? But that's how it was done. Now, we get so high and mighty about this, but then we look at the Amazon, and that's exactly what's happening in the Amazon. So
right.
Before we get too full of ourselves, and hindsight's always 20/20, and people are doing that right now because they need the farmland. That's what was happening back then, being cleared for farmland. So.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say. So all this beautiful wood is at the bottom of the rivers, and it's still there.
Yes, a lot of. You have to find it. It's pretty expensive. You have to use sonar and go down there. But when you find one of these logs, you must understand that this log is, it might be 12 feet in diameter.
Wow.
And it may be 100 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you pull that up, you have wood that was cut down, let's say in the late 1800s, let's say 1900. Well, that tree it probably started growing around 1500.
Mm-hmm.
So here is this wood that, you just don't find 400-year-old trees anymore that people make buildings out of. And so this wood, this gorgeous wood, they raise it up, and of course you go through the process of drying it out and mill it, and it is it's just stunning. It's just beautiful.
I bet there's no piece like any other.
They're all so
unique.
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Now, that's just one of the things that's one of the types of wood that we get. There is a thing called LEED, L-E-E-D, compliance, and that is a standard set up for green building. And in effect, that means that you're getting your recycling materials and you're getting them within a 500-mile radius, or they're local. Now, there are other ways to earn LEED points when you construct a home or a building, but that's one way. And for that, we get products here. Again, I'm in the Dallas area. We get product, we get lumber within a 60-mile radius of Dallas, Texas, that is 400-year-old wood that was used to build houses in the 20s, or warehouses, or churches, or barns, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the wood that was being used back then. That's what was in the construction supply chain.
Yeah. Well, my husband just signed up to your list today. So what kind of words of advice do you have for him or any other prospective buyer of your product?
Well, whether it's my product or anybody else's product, here's what I always explain to people. Sometimes you're going to find a price differential that is such that it's just tough to make it work. But sometimes you will not. Now, that means that sometimes it's very competitively priced. But the point is that the wood that you're using, whether it's me or anyone else, and it's recycled, truly recycled old-growth wood, then you're going to see wood that in the forest setting, not in a setting where they have planted it row after row and it's being raised like corn as a crop, but in the natural forest setting, that wood had to fight for every bit of growth that it got. So it was much more dense. When people think of pine in our lifetimes, since the 30s, they think of pine that is very light in color, very light in weight, that is wet, that is, you know, that kind of thing. It's not very good wood. But the old stuff, it's very hard, it's very heavy, and you can immediately tell the difference. Well, my words of wisdom for anyone out there is that you can tell the difference in the flooring once you put it down. When you look at the wood and you put new stuff right beside it, you can tell the difference. I promise you can see the difference. But the value to me is the story that goes into it, and very often I'm able to say, you know, that flooring right there, it was part of a Victorian house that came from Mansfield, Texas, built around 1890, and it's been remilled to tongue and groove flooring, and it's, you know, the story itself, in addition to the fact that it is 100% recycled. It's been reused. It is not cutting down another tree. Is there a shortage of trees? Well, I don't know. But I do know this, that we are filling up landfills every day with wood that started growing in the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s, 1700s of this, you know,
oh, my
history.
Goodness.
And we're just knocking them down with a bulldozer and throwing it in a dumpster and throwing it away. And to me, that is, I started to use the word violation. I don't know if it's a violation, but to me that is certainly not being good stewards of our planet. I don't see the need to do that, especially when it is such beautiful stuff that could be appreciated by our grandchildren. So why are we throwing it away? So that's kind of my soapbox right there.
I have a question.
It is. So you had said something also that a lot of the wood is gotten here in Pennsylvania. How does that work? Is there just been a lot of? Do you have a lot of scouts here in the state that figure out where these trees are?
Well, there are folks throughout the United States that recognize the value, not only the historical value, but the value to acquiring this antique wood. For instance, I mentioned to you that there were some folks in Pennsylvania. Is it pronounced Amish or Amish?
Amish.
Amish. Well, the Amish are pretty big dealers in this type of stuff, but because it certainly fits their lifestyle. and their philosophy on life.
Yeah.
But for instance, all up and down, well, really, I should say, east of the Mississippi River, if you think about it, there were houses and barns and buildings and what have you that were being built from, 1520, 1620 on.
Right.
And some of them, you know, certainly the ones in prior to the Civil War, 1800, some even prior to 1800, of course, but post-1800, let's say, all the way up to 1880, those structures, there's a lot of those structures. Like, for instance, one of the projects we were just bidding on, the material was barn siding, but it came out of Kentucky and then went through Pennsylvania, by the way.
Mm-hmm,
and the barn siding, the things that they made the siding out of back then, just, again, just kind of blow your mind. But this entire huge barn, I don't mean, a 10-by-10 barn. I mean a huge barn. And all the siding was 1 inch thick, about 6 to 11 inches wide, excuse me, and, 10, 12, 14, 18 feet long, and it was all oak.
Oh, my goodness.
And so you can only imagine the oak trees that were cut down to build this barn.
Oh, that's true, too.
So, but that was what was available, and obviously there had to be, huge, magnificent oak trees. But they were cleared to make farmland and to build a barn.
Mm-hmm.
And this stuff, you can see the old rough saw marks on it and whatnot. So, just an amazing thing. But that's throughout the country. So some of our products come from around the country, and that you still get lead points for recycling materials, but you get more lead points if your source material is within 500 miles of your location. Now, will that make a big difference to most people that are building their dream home or what have you? No, but it is nice to know. You'll still get points if you use recycled material, though.
You said lead points. What is that?
Well, that's a standard that was set by the Green Builders that, and I have forgotten what the acronym stands for, and I'll probably remember it the instant I hang up the phone, but it's it's the end of the day, and I don't remember it at the moment. But it is an acronym that sets up standards for builders using green building, and it is a determination, it is a standard for reusing, recycling, and using building materials that are environmentally friendly.
I see. And
you're awarded points for each one of those standards that you meet. And so if you're wanting a certification that you have a LEED certified project that you have built, then that's how you add the points until finally you get enough points to where you have a LEED certified project.
Right. Another thing I was really interested in was that you said that the trees that we enjoy today are only as old as the Great Depression. Tell me a little bit about that.
Some of them, yes, absolutely. Some of the old pictures clearly represent the only forestry program, I should say, that was in place up until the 30s, 1930s, was clear cutting. You just you just cut it all down, just cut them off. The work programs established under FDR. And by the way, let me back up. Teddy Roosevelt was one of the first to look at that, and he just hated it, which was one of the reasons that the national parks, he was instrumental in establishing the national parks. But the forestry program really began in the 30s as government work programs. Mm-hmm. And particularly the pine forests that, you know, they were so prevalent. There were so many of them. The pine forests were, there were more pine forests than other types of trees, especially in the southeast and up the northern seaboard, that when they were wiped out, the government work programs came back and they started planting seedlings. A reforestation program was established. Now, the difference is that the trees that were replanted in that program were short leaf pine trees. And the reason they were planted is that loblolly pine, for instance, is that they grow much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the old longleaf pine trees, again, they would be 175 feet tall. I mean, they were huge. But they took 100 to 400 years to mature.
Wow.
So knowing that the country was in serious, they were in a real bad state of affairs because they didn't have building materials. They didn't have any, they were running out fast. So they planted the fast-growing loblolly short-leaf pine pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what, if you'll, where in my part of the world, East Texas and Louisiana, that part of Texas and Louisiana right down in there, you'll notice if you drive through there that those forests, the trees are all about the same height and about the same diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to looking at it, you start realizing that, and it's not that there aren't new seedlings coming up, but it's not a forest that has been in place for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a
mm-hmm.
forest that began growing in the 30s.
Right.
And so what you see is about the same diameter, and that is true for millions of acres, because this was a huge government work program to replant. And then finally, after World War II, finally those trees started maturing enough that they could start using them as building material. So in the 50s in the United States, in the 50s and 60s, the baby boomers and the start of the suburban growth, that's when they went back to pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they started using it again as a building material. But during World War II, fir was a predominant building material.
Wow.
Douglas fir.
Douglas fir. Yeah. To your knowledge, are there any longleaf pine trees still standing today?
Hopefully, there are 10 to 11,000 acres. None of it is contiguous. I've heard that there's some in Arkansas. I've heard that there's some in Georgia. I have not seen pictures of them. I don't. Matter of fact, a forest ranger here in Texas, down in the Piney Woods, we asked one time, hey, do you have any longleaf we can see? And he just laughed. Went, oh no, those were cut down 100 years ago. There might be some.
Yeah,
you know.
I feel like there has to be some.
Well, again, there's. It's just that I have not seen them. I don't know where they are. I'm
why
not sure
are we not?
I'd tell anybody if I did.
Yeah,
why
yeah.
are we not planting them?
Because they are not a viable material for construction any longer. They take too long to grow.
But 400 years from now, they would be important.
400 years ago, they'd be fantastic. Now, the issue becomes, you know, are you going to have land that is, quote, unproductive, unquote, for 400 years?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the issue, because forestry management now is quick growth, harvest, replant, go to the next one.
I think Joan is probably, I mean, what I get from what you're saying, Joan, is I bet there are people who would just love to plant those trees. And,
or just,
you know,
if you had one in your backyard, for instance.
Exactly, yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, the way that they you know, we need a forest ranger or a forestry major or something here. To my knowledge, the way that this works is that they have to have forest fires come through. It's part of the process. Mm-hmm. That not only does it burn out all the undergrowth, but of course it leaves a carbon, which kind of, you know, fertilizes the ground. But that is part of that's needed for them to grow.
Yes.
Mm. So I'm not saying that you can't do that. I would love it. I'd love to see 1,000 acres replanted with longleaf pine, and, you know, let them tower 175 feet tall and let them become a forest again.
I know. Sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Just the thought of it. Well, there is another caller here on the line. I'm just going to bring her on. Hello there.
Hi, Kate.
Hi,
hey,
Betty.
Joan. Pat, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm calling from Athens, Georgia.
There you go. Wonderful.
And just love what you're doing. In fact, I'm a tree lover myself, and have to share my own little stories of recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Joan and Kate, you've heard about my oak that I lost this past summer.
Yes.
Probably. And, Pat, I live in an older part of Athens.
Uh-huh.
And my house was built in probably the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And the oak in my front yard had been ill with a fungus and so on. And I know the people on the tree commission in Athens and so on. And so I'd had people from the city watching it and helping me make a decision. Do I leave it? Do I take it down?
Yeah.
For about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And finally the time came. I knew after a limb broke our neighbor's windshield on their car that it was time to protect the neighbor and the walkers and the property. And I had to remove the tree.
Uh-huh.
And it was after, well, had a wonderful, wonderful crew that did it.
Mm-hmm.
And the tree was about just, compared to yours, a baby. It was only 75 or 80 years old, but large for an oak.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned the corner after working, and they were in the process of removing the tree, and I started crying then, and I cried until they finished. And but they were so dear because they were sympathetic to the loss of the tree for
sure.
Me. You know, it had been, I've lived in the house 40 years.
Yeah.
And I told them to save some branches and just, 1-inch cuts or 2-inch cuts, circles, for me that I knew a wood carver.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they saved, I said, I want the wood carver to make bowls for my children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they saved all these fabulous bees, you know, from branches and so on. They knew what to save.
Mm-hmm.
But the wood carver took all the pieces home. He was thrilled and loved the challenge. And he called me and said, I can't do the bowls like you want. He said, I have to let the wood talk to me.
Yeah.
And I said, you do whatever you need to do.
What a great story. Go ahead.
And he called me sometime later,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted these to be Christmas gifts for my children.
Mm-hmm.
And adult children, by the way. And anyway, he said, I want to show you something. And he came over with the unsealed product, and he had made the most gorgeous lamp
mm-hmm.
out of one of the pieces of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried.
Yeah.
It was so exquisitely beautiful with the worm markings in the wood. And it looked like someone had taken India ink, what I call India ink, the black ink, and drawn designs the way he masterfully used what the wood was giving to him.
Oh, how wonderful.
And he had made my bowl
mm-hmm.
for me.
You know,
and then we talked about a certain type for my daughter who was has antiques and oriental flair.
Yes.
And I said, I don't think this style will suit her home. And we talked about the style, and he created a different design for her lamp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I gave my children for Christmas.
Oh, how
and
wonderful, wonderful.
They are just, you know, it's just such a wonderful thing for them to have.
Uh-huh. What
as part of their growing up.
Modern, they are called urban foresters.
Oh.
Are
just,
doing is, in that instance, the that particular, you know, that type of tree. That and, you know, I get some joy out of this if it were mine, and I'm not suggesting any that you did that should have done anything different. I don't mean that at all. What they are doing is when those trees come down, those, I'm sure that was a huge oak tree at that
it
point.
It was.
They are taking it and making flooring out of, rather than throwing that wood away.
Well, I hope they are, and I think this man probably salvaged. In fact, I know he does. But he was so good in his skill and so compassionate to me and so knowledgeable that whatever he did, I think, was the right thing.
Yes.
And the same thing happened over the snowstorm we had within the past couple of months, well, past month or so. I have a tree on my back property that is on the historic registry here in Athens. It's not the oldest oak, but it is. It was measured in 1983, I guess, and listed as one of the outstanding oaks.
Wonderful.
And
25 years ago.
Yeah.
26 years ago.
Well, let's see.
Yeah, you're right, 20 to whatever, 24
something years. Okay, and then it was remeasured and re-entered, the information re-entered this year.
Mm-hmm.
But because one of my volunteers at the hospital is a tree, on the tree commission mm-hmm. thing. But anyway,
well,
it lost.
Well, you know, one of the things that that is on that video that and it's just a few second slide, but it says so much, and it says so much about us culturally, I think, and that is there is a map, and there are four maps of the United States, and they start in 1620,
oh
my God, 18 something, and then and the four go, and the and on the map it shows the areas of the country with virgin forest.
Oh,
and it
wow.
starts out, and basically the center of the plains, the Great Plains, and, of course, some of the mountains, are the only places that it's not pretty dark with the coloring of the virgin forest. And then by the time it gets to the present time, there are, you know, obviously there's just little pockets.
Mm.
That's all that's left. Now, the thing that I looked at that and I thought about, the first people that were coming to the country, and they would look at the dark, foreboding forest, and it had to be conquered. They
oh, wow.
You know, that was their mentality. And
yeah.
conquer it they did, because, you know, you really, it was tough to live in that environment, literally. And so, but what has happened to me, as I look at that, I think, you know, the mentality has changed, because, you know, that forest would keep them from, obviously, from making a living back then, because it was an agrarian society.
Right.
They couldn't grow things.
Right.
So it was kind of the enemy. And now we have, that has, the things have turned around, and those forests, now we understand what we lost when we just completely wiped them out. And now, rather than the enemy, the trees mean more to us now, because we don't see, I mean, a 70-year-old, 80-year-old oak is now an old tree for us.
Yes. And I think, I love that cities are so, and Athens in particular, is very much into recording and marking and recognizing the value of the trees and replanting.
Yes. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, I would love to hear if there, right where you are, if it would be easier than it would be for me where I am, to know if there are any longleaf pine pockets there in Georgia.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll
yeah,
see
it
if
sounds
I can.
Like there would be.
It does sound like there would be, and I will. Look, right now we are not real happy with the pines because, and they're probably the short needle, but the pines are from storm standpoint, are very dangerous because they bend and so brittle and the root system is so shallow that the pines are quick to go during storms, whether it's ice or our very occasional snow, but... If I find out anything, I'll let you know.
Please do. Please
okay,
do.
Okay, it's great to talk
it.
To you all.
Thank you. I
thank
love
you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that with me.
Thank Good
you.
Luck to you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Pat, I don't believe we introduced Betty properly as Moonvine's sister. We... That sort of took off before I could say anything, but yeah, that is Moon Jones' sister, and that is terrific.
Yeah, I love that story with the Christmas presents. It's so
well,
dear
you know,
for the children to have something, you know.
The classic line is, "That's I have to listen to what the wood is telling me."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like she could easily find out about the longleaf pine, you know, possibility of them still existing there in Georgia because, as you had said, there's pockets there. So
yeah, I think
we'll get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
Well,
this
anybody can find out, she can for sure. Isn't that neat?
Maybe she can take some pictures and send it to us here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good pictures of them, yeah.
Yeah.
As you're talking, I keep... Go ahead, Pat,
Kate. No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I just keep thinking, and when we were newlyweds 40, 50 years ago, we lived in what is called James Monroe's Summer Cottage outside of D.C., and I can remember so well sweeping those floors and fussing, you know, because of the crack, you know, the cracks. It wasn't like normal floors for us now. But, oh, what a treasure they were, and I was too young to know it.
Yes.
I just keep thinking, oh, Joan, you're so stupid. You didn't even realize what you had. Because they were gorgeous floors.
Yes, yes. And, you know, more and more people, you know, carpet wears out. And believe me, I'm looking down at carpet on my floor here in the office right now. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's, but carpet wears out, or it just, you know, in a few years, whether it's 5 or 7 or 8 or whatever it is, it needs to be replaced. And further, it catches a lot of dust. Now I've got a kid that's an asthmatic, so that's an issue, especially. You know, carpet collects dust and whatnot. But what we are seeing is that, especially in this economy, which is kind of interesting, that people are kind of sitting around. They're going, you know, bad at the bottom of the market, it's a bad time to sell. And I don't think I want to sell right now. I don't think we could sell if we wanted to. Who's going to buy it? I'll tell you what, let's fix it up. And they look at the carpet and they think, you know, we bought carpet 5, 6, 8, whatever it is, years ago. Why don't we go ahead and put hardwoods down? Because, you know, I don't want to have to replace carpet. And further, it adds to the resale value. Well, from my personal experience, if you use the type of wood that we're talking about, one has such, it is such value added. You have... One has such a better story to tell about their home, and it conveys, you know, pride of ownership, and it conveys uniqueness, and it, you know, it just, you're going to make whatever you spend just about on hardwood, antique, recycled, reclaimed hardwood flooring, you're going to make back when you sell your home. And you're not going to do that with carpet.
Now, Pat, I have hardwoods in our little house, and but of course it has a coating on it, so there's nothing to do to it but just wipe it with a damp towel or a mop or something.
Yes.
How do you care for those antique woods like that?
Well, they're no different than any other wood, and that's a great question. They're simply no different than any other hardwood floor. They just happen to be, the quality is just, because of the age and because of, you know, again, how long it took them to grow and on, they just have greater beauty, and they're harder wood usually. But as far as caring for them, it's no different, whether it's a dust mop or, you know, water without strong detergents, you know, water alone, you know, to mop it down and clean it. It's really the maintenance. It's no extra maintenance at all.
Mm-hmm. Or actually less maintenance.
What's that? Say that again?
Less maintenance, really, than carpet.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times we've had the carpet cleaned.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, we removed all of the carpeting in our house. And what was so fun, not every room, this was not true of every room, but one room where we took up the carpeting, there was this beautiful old oak floor that we were able to preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the other floors, we put down some wood that, you know, not any kind of the wood that you're describing. But we have an old barn that my husband would like to put some unique flooring down, so that is why he's interested.
Oh,
and
okay, yeah.
So, yeah, we pretty much did some work with trying to preserve half of the barn by lifting up the whole foundation. That was quite the job. We did that day in and day out last summer, but we accomplished the task just before the winter came. We even saved an old... We saved a beautiful bullfrog in the cistern that lives in our basement. And
fabulous.
Yeah, he just loves his home. if we put him down in the river, you know, he'd be eaten up.
Yeah.
We live on the river, and that's another thing. I think there might be some wood lying on the bottom of that river, too.
Oh, okay.
Don't you know there is?
Yeah.
Yes, we do know, don't we? There has to be.
Yeah.
But when I worked in the Forest Service years ago, speaking of forest fires moving through, but there was some old-growth forests there that were magnificent. And I don't think they were all Douglas fir either. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of exact pine tree that they were. But it was way up north in California.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Happy Camp. Mm-hmm. Happy Camp, California, and it was a big Forest Service kind of employment situation there.
Yeah.
And we went through the forest. My job was, along with my crew, was to plant little trees, which really weren't making it. They were not really making it.
Yeah.
But the beautiful old trees were just magnificent, and they were old. And what we're talking about here makes me really want to know more about. I don't think they were there from the very beginning. You know,
yes.
They were just.
Yes.
Amazing trees.
Yes. Well, you know, I think the issue is, what most people are looking for is value. They want value for their, if they're going to do something like this, they, you know, you want it to, if you're going to put flooring down and you're, sometimes, I mean, some. I will be the first to admit, some of this antique stuff, it's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the value of doing that? And you kind of brought up a point when you're talking about replanting. I understand that nobody's going anywhere, and we're going to have people, and there's going to be more and more people. And you know, it's wonderful to save the forest, and obviously that's what I prefer. We can't save all the forests. It's, you know, we have to coexist some way. And I just tend to look at the clear cutting while we turn around and we look at the clear cutting that it took place, you know, for centuries, and we don't understand how could they do that. Well, I think that future generations are going to look at us and go, how could you take these old buildings and old houses? And I promise you, in whatever town that you're in, somewhere in your town, there's houses that were built in the 20s and 30s and maybe even before, or buildings or churches or warehouses or something. And they're going to look at us and they're going to say, why did you just throw those away? Mm-hmm. Now, how does that impact a person that just wants to, you know, that they're looking for the value in their floor? And it is my position that not only are they going to, if you do this kind of thing, you get, you know, obviously it's gorgeous quality wood, but the value to you in and above that is, again, as we were talking about, is that if it's for your home, what a story you have to tell at that point. And secondly, you are saving something and you're reusing it and you're recycling. And the thing that has happened in this economy is that people are now going, oh, you know, it's kind of cool to conserve.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a pretty good idea, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, the first 300 years of this country, of the, you know, from when people first started colonizing until it became a country, and then a couple hundred years after it became a country, is that it was an agrarian society. Well, people on farms, they don't kill a cow and cut out the ribeyes and throw the cow away.
Yeah.
You know, people
use
everything. They
right.
used that just what that was our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
It was to reuse, and we didn't use these terms back then, of course, but it was to reuse, recycle, conserve. I mean, that's just the way. You weren't wasteful. It just didn't
right.
make sense. It didn't have a lot of value to be wasteful. Well, I interpret that in with the product that we have, with what we do, with basically our mission, if you will, which is to utilize and save this stuff from being thrown in the landfill. So I think for the person that's buying this stuff, sure, you want to get a good bang for your buck. You want to have a product that you can be proud of and that won't break the bank. And, you know, we try to do that. But over and above that, for all of us, on a macro scale, if you will, what this whole thing represents is us as a country and us as, you know, a people now, looking at what we have done in the past and going, you know, let's live a little differently now. We don't have to just, you know, the plastic age of just throw it away, just use it and just throw it away, is changing. And I think that's the value and that's the good thing that's happening. And this is a reflection of, you know, 10 years ago, this just wouldn't have been as important as it is today. I'm talking about our new life hardwood floors, I'll put it that way.
Exactly.
So now I find that to be a very positive thing. I'm very proud to be a part of it. And I think each one of us, as we utilize, whether you utilize my product, another product, whether it's flooring, whether it's solar energy, whether it's wind energy, whatever it is that is not wasteful, that is that shows respect for our environment and for, you know, our place in the world, I mean, that's a good thing. You know, I'm happy to be a part of that.
Well, my house is 1792. And
there you go.
At one point we were putting the house up on the market, but the people that were selling, our realtors were so disrespectful of, say, the barn. They said, well, the barn needs to be torn down because of the issues of some of the foundations I was just describing. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. My husband and I looked at each other and we stood up and we said, well, you know, we understand you have absolutely no respect for this wonderful beautiful place, and you may now leave our house.
Yeah.
It was, we were very calm. We were not mean. It was just we both looked at each other, and we both stood up, and we said, you may leave now.
They don't get
and
it.
We took the house off the market, and we started to, you know, do things like lifting foundations and that kind of stuff. So,
yes.
And saving bullfrogs for the cistern.
But Kate, what a treasure. I mean, that's just
it
a treasure to have.
It is.
A huge responsibility.
Well,
it
you know,
yeah.
As we were talking about before, and that 1790 is what made me think of it. If you can think for just a moment, now I do this, now I know maybe I'm a weirdo, and I'll admit it, you know. But I when you tell me a story like that about a barn that was built in 1790 or whatever, I know for me it is pretty easy for me to kind of visually, pardon me, I kind of do what's that term where you go through time, kind of a time leap.
Time machine, yeah.
Yeah, you know, where you kind of, and you go
time
back
capsule.
And in 1790, what was it, you know, horses, there were no, a telephone didn't ring. There were no lights that you flipped on. When they were building that barn, nobody plugged in or started a saw. You
right.
Know? And you know, what was life like? And as you stand there and look at this, and you're looking, I do anyway, I'm looking at the boards or whatever, and I'm thinking about the guy, what was he dressed like that built this? That what did he eat that day? When he went home, what was his home like? What
mm-hmm.
was his... You know, what was his family like? What did they do? You know,
what
that kind
thinking?
Of thing. And
yeah.
So
when
I look at that wood then that they were using in 1790, and again, they had to have used old growth wood in 1790. There wasn't any option. That's all there was. So in 1790, okay, let's say 100. Now, you know, a couple hundred years. You know, tree, cause they wanted to cut down the biggest tree because you got the most amount of wood out of it.
Right.
I mean, why go cut down a little tree, you know? So they're cutting down the biggest trees available. Well, you know, that means that theoretically, if that was a 400-year-old tree, that means that that wood that you're looking at, that barn was built out of in 1790, theoretically, that started growing in 1390.
Wow.
You know, now what was life like back then? And you think of, you know, that means that by 1620, by the time the Jamestown colony, oops, Freudian slip there, I guess, the Jamestown colony, you know, started, that thing was 200 years old.
Wow.
How tall was it? Now think about that. Now, and so I kind of, you know, go through this time warp. I'm looking at this stuff going, wow, now let's put this in perspective. Now realize it's just a piece of wood, but as when you really think about it, that barn right there, that's what that represents, you know? That's the not only the history but the legacy of it.
Absolutely.
Well, and if it could talk.
Yeah.
If it could only talk.
If it could only talk, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, it does talk, and like Betty said about the gentleman who was taking care of her wood, that he was listening to what the wood was telling him.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. Well, believe it or not, we are in the last minute of this program.
Oh, wow.
Very fast hour.
It was wonderful, and we appreciate your coming on, Pat, very, very much.
Oh, man.
And it was just terrific. I will put it on a podcast, and we write articles about it, and we just distribute it all over the place. So.
Let me put in a plug for my website.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. Say it. What it is.
NewLifeHardwoodFloors.com.
Right on.
New life for old forest wood.
And that will be put in everything that we put out about this wonderful program. So
wonderful.
Thank you. Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Delightful, Pat. I totally enjoyed it.
Well, good. Very good. Let's keep in touch.
We'll do
we
that.
We will.
Thank you, Pat.
We'll look into the trees in Athens, Georgia, for sure. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Have
bye-bye.
A good evening.
You too. I just also want to say to appreciate Klaus Jensen and his beautiful music, music of For Mother and Child. And I will finish out the program with that music. Thank you, Joan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Delightful.
It was great.
Good night.
I will talk to you soon. Good night. Freak you out.